powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
What's the easier fix, the Huskies or the Seahawks? That is your question. We're turning it over to calls just like we do every single Monday, every single Friday. So let's get this started with Christian in the 206. Christian, what's the easier fix, the Huskies or the Hawks?
Happy Monday, y'all. Happy Monday. How
Happy
we doing?
Happy Monday. We're good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Just trying to stay dry. Listen, I think this is no comparison at all. We know the easier fix here. Our beloved Huskies don't even have a head coach, Stacey. So the easier fix right now is the Seahawks, quickly. The Huskies have not been the Huskies, quite frankly, since opening kickoff of the Peach Bowl 2016, if anybody can remember. We're not going to really talk in detail about that. But
we don't need to.
We haven't been right since then, you guys. So Seahawks, easier fix. Huskies, to be determined. We'll see.
All right. Thanks for the call, Christian. And I agree. I think that not having the head coach is huge, obviously. But going to what Mike Vorell said when he was on with us, like, the biggest question facing the Huskies right now is, can Jen Cohen make the right hire?
Right. That is it. That's not a great place that you want to be in. And quite frankly, Christian, I think you nailed it in terms of this program has not been the same since that opening kickoff since 2016. I would 100% agree with you, because after that, everything changed. Everything started to change from an offensive perspective, from the enthusiasm that was within the program, all of it. It turned quickly, which is why I think with the Seahawks, this is an easier fix. This is much more salvageable. And right now you're looking at it from one perspective that, okay, you've got to get one side of the ball. Just talking about its current status, you got to get one side of the ball right. You got to get the offense going. You've got to get your quarterback going. You've got to find, you know, life for that side of the ball. And with the way the defense is playing, you can find yourself with this team getting hot really fast, but that has to come together. Both sides have to play on the same page and fire on all cylinders at the same time, and that's just something that hasn't happened in the past 2 years.
What's the easier fix, the Huskies or the Hawks? Call now, 206-421-3776. Going to Bill in Linwood. Bill, what's the easier fix?
Well, I'm going to disagree with the last caller. I think that the Huskies will be an easier fix. The reason why, Jake and Stacy, is because the nature of the game, the college game, is more transitional. The pro game is more entrenched. So once personnel moves are made in college, the changes can flow and things can take shape. With the Seahawks, there's going to be a lot of resistance, because if our quarterback is not here next year, we have a different quarterback and the same coaches, change, you know, there's so many players that are here for many years and coaches, and things take time with resistance, so that they're entrenched. It's just going to be harder to really make a big, big change.
Now, it's a unique perspective that I really like, and I think that is looking at it from a positive point of view. If you find the right guy, that's what I was talking about with UW. If they found the right guy and came in with the right philosophy, both offensively and defensively, tapped in to the strengths of the roster that you currently have here at UW, and also factor in the fact that the Pac-12 is not a great conference, it's not a dominant conference, and everybody beats up on each other, if you found the right person, you can get good really fast. And so that's a great point. Now, with the Seahawks, I believe that, you know, the caller is talking about specifically if there is transition. If you don't keep Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll together after the season, one of them parts ways with each other, then there is, it opens up to a whole different kind of conversation. And so from that aspect, you talk about it from, if both of them are in disarray, so to speak, at the end of the season, then yeah, I do think that UW puts themselves in a position, if hiring the right guy, they can find themselves to get back on track relatively quickly, whereas in the NFL, man, it's really, really hard to do that when you transition from a head coach or a franchise quarterback.
Thanks for the call, Bill. If you guys want to join the conversation, call now, 206-421-3776. Going to Chase in Seattle. Chase, what's the easier fix, the Huskies or the Seahawks?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks. What you got for us?
Yeah, so right now I'm thinking that, honestly, the Huskies are in a better spot to get better sooner. You know, similar to what the last guy said, I think that the Huskies have a great defense, which is, you know, a big portion of this game. I think once they get the offensive team back on track, speedy, quick, you know, let's not run it up the middle every single time, have it be obvious. I think that there's going to be a lot more offense, and that's really the only thing they're missing. Now, going to the Seahawks, I think the Seahawks have a more difficult, specifically because if you remember all of the off-season drama with Russell Wilson, what's his plan, what's he going to do? Well, the big thing that's going to come up here is, are we going to re-sign him, and is it going to be for more money where that takes away, you know, different positions of availability to get better? You know, I always look at two teams, two things you need to have. A, you need to have the rookies come in and play well, which we've whiffed on pretty much besides, you know, maybe DK and the punter. And then number two, are we going to have, you know, guys come in and be able to play to their, you know, fullest potential? And we're just not seeing that. Jamal's not coming up. He's not playing to the top dollar. I mean, these are the things that need to happen to win Super Bowls.
Now,
thanks for taking my call.
Chase, are you still on the line? Hang on. I'm going to push back on one thing, just mostly because I want to clarify what you're saying. I also wonder what Russell Wilson's future is going to be in Seattle, but I haven't ever seen it as he wants to get re-signed and paid more because he's still under contract. I've seen it as he wants to have more of a say in what's going on with the offense. Like, I don't think that Russell Wilson taking up even more of the cap is a factor here. I think it's a power balance between he and Pete.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I always look at it as, you know, the most winning team to me was the Patriots. And what Tom Brady did is he took salary cuts to allow them to build up other positions. And I don't see that with the Seahawks or him doing that in the future, which concerns me of, is he going to take too much of the salary cap to allow the rest of the team to also be good?
Chase, thank you for the call, man. Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Chase.
You know, the part about UW, I think that's a very rosy way of looking at it. I very much disagree with UW in terms of how simple of a fix it is, because you can point to the defense, but they're also giving up, you know, the most rushing yards in college football, close to it. They're towards the bottom in terms of their rush defense. So this isn't a defense that is just absolutely stellar. And the only reason why, you know, your passing defense looks good statistically is you have two of the better corners and corner tandems in all of college football. But eventually those guys graduate, right? So you have to replenish that talent. You have to keep that talent here when you get hired. So it's a lot more complicated. It's a lot more complicated with UW, and they've got to find the perfect solution. And that is a very difficult thing for them to do. Whereas with Seattle, again, I agree that it becomes muddy. And after the season, what do you do? Can you keep both sides happy? Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, can they work together? If not, then you're looking at something that ends up, you know, you find a divorce here, and neither any alternative is not an easy fix. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just walk away from a top five quarterback in the league and easily replace them. You don't walk away from a Hall of Fame head coach and it be easy to replace them. Can it work? Can you get it done? Yes, but it's got to be the absolute right find and the way you construct their roster. And so either way, it is. I don't think there's any easy solution for the Seattle Seahawks here.
I want to tack on one final point, which is, I recognize what Chase is trying to say, but I always take issue with that argument because, first of all, get paid, get your money. NFL careers are notoriously short, and it is notoriously hard to get the full amount that you're owed under your salary. You'll probably get injured before your deal's over. You won't hit your incentives, what have you. Get your money. I'm all for players getting their money. Secondly, Tom Brady is married to a multimillionaire supermodel. That family has never had to worry about not being able to make money. Thirdly, the amount of like pay cut that he's taking is minuscule.
Well, but also you have to factor in the closeness of the relationship between owner and quarterback. Robert Kraft.
Well, no,
and
there's
Tom
been a
Brady.
Little bit of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, he's totally taking a pay cut kind of situation.
Yeah.
We don't have to get
and
into
they have a very, 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 very strong and close relationship. So is another factor that most people don't look at that's unusual in that particular situation.
I'm just saying, I'm not excusing Russell Wilson's mistakes, and I'm not excusing the fact that he didn't play like a franchise quarterback yesterday. What I'm saying
is
that paying a franchise quarterback is something that you're just going to have to do. No matter what, right now, that guy is going to take up, 18 to 24% of the cap, varying degrees in varying years. I think that the biggest problem isn't, and then we don't have money to spend on free agents. It's, then you haven't hit on draft picks. That's where the rest of that play is supposed to come from, is guys that are on rookie deals that are playing well for you. They have not been able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the next caller, I'm getting off topic here. Nelson and Kent. Nelson, what's the easier fix, Huskies or Hawks?
Man, who would have thought 2021, our best sports team would be the Mariners. I was not expecting that. But as a baseball fan, I like that. But anyway, I mean, in theory, it's the Seahawks. As for the Huskies, you know, Jen Cohen's, ever since she's come in, both basketball programs have gone down. The football program's gone down. I just have no faith she'll hire the right person. What I would say, though, for the Huskies, with the Pac-12 kind of being a dumpster fire. I mean, USC and UCLA, which are also premier schools, they're having major issues too. So, you know, if the Huskies can get it right, I think their road to success is probably easier than the Seahawks, because our division's really, really brutal. But again, that's in theory. I think this could get really ugly. And you know, the marriage of Russell and Pete, I've been calling you guys, I've been tweeting about it, I've probably disagreed with Jake many times, but this marriage hasn't worked for a while. It's not working anymore. And I'm going to actually disagree with you, Jake, that Russell's not a top five quarterback anymore. I think he's still much, I think we're kind of mixing in like his career with what he's really done over the last full year. If you date to back the second half of last year and this year, he's just way too much inconsistency. And everyone who was saying, you know, Russell would beat the Saints and the Steelers, like, you saw him hold on to the ball too long. Like, the same sack that Geno take, Russell was going to take. I'm not sure that we win both those. Maybe we win one of them. But how much of it, you know, how much of my feelings are because of Pete Carroll's offense? Like, maybe Russell, like, maybe in a new offense, a new mind, maybe I'm blown away and he looks way better. Maybe. But we rely way too much on just deep bombs, no short play, no short passes. And I don't see Pete changing. I see Russell demanding either, like, he gets a lot of say, which Pete is never going to give, or he wants out, which maybe you trade him for 3 first-rounders and Daniel Jones or something, and then Pete Carroll rebuilds. But I don't want to go through a rebuild with Pete Carroll. I mean, Bill Belichick moved on from Tom Brady, and look, in a year, he's already got that team looking like a real good team. And I don't have confidence Pete can do that. So I'm stuck. I'm at a loss, man, but I think it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, that's where, you know, Nelson, thanks for the call here. Brought a lot to the table here in terms of things to chew on. But that's why this caller question isn't a simple one, right? I mean, when we ask the question, that's why my immediate reaction, Stacey, is in theory,
both of them, it should every be, call is.
Yeah, in theory, this is how it could work out. But I think that ultimately talks to the status of where the Seahawks are at, because it should be the Seahawks. 100% should be the Seahawks. They should not be in the same situation as UW and the dire situation that UW is in. Right, the fix is very easy compared to what UW is in my opinion, because you can get this offense back on track and finish hot in the second half, and you know, you come to a resolution as to how you can move forward. But I do believe, as Nelson pointed out, that is a complicated issue, and you have to figure out what your philosophy is going to be. And can that work for both sides? And Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and everything else, based off of what we know over the past 2 years, that being a conversation where they have not necessarily seen eye to eye. So that is something that you're pointing to and you're hoping that can work out, because it just, if it can work out between the two and you can find common ground and both sides can play well, they're a playoff team if they're able to play on all cylinders. But right now they're not, and they're 3-6, and we're in this predicament right now. So that's why it's so incredibly frustrating to me at this current time, and that's why I believe both of them are not easy fixes, and that's why it's such a difficult question to ask or answer.
What's the easier fix, the Huskies or the Seahawks going to line 5, Joseph in Tacoma? Joseph, what's your answer?
Well,
oh, hey, Joseph, we got you.
Hello.
What's up, Joseph? What do you got for us, man?
What's up, folks? What's up? Oh, well, I mean, after yesterday's game, I mean, the first game, and the first word that comes to mind is just woof.
with you.
You know, the Huskies, they have a bit of work to do to get up to the level that my Oregon Ducks are at. And I use the Oregon Ducks because they're pretty much the best team in the Pac-12 and have been so for some time. So if you're going to get to the top, you're going to have to go through them. So that's going to be the Huskies' first task. You got to topple my Oregon Ducks. But the Seahawks, well, Jake, why was Shane Waldron brought here? Because I was under the understanding that it was to run the offense, and offense with DK, Tyler, Russ should not be bottom three, bottom four in the NFL, which they currently are.
Right.
And I can not figure out why.
So is Joseph, in that regard, when you have that question, is that why you believe the Seahawks should be the easier fix, or are you saying that you don't believe they are the easier fix because this is a situation that's gone bad?
Well, it should be the Seahawks, but and unfortunately,
you have little faith it is.
I don't think that it is. I mean, like you said, Russell plays offense. He's not out there making sacks. He's not out there picking off passes. He's on the offense. And right now, Russ's offense is the bottom of the league for the first time in his career.
Mm-hmm.
He has a couple other firsts this year, none of which have been good firsts. Mm-hmm. And
Joseph, what I'm hearing you say is, hey, in theory, it would be the Seahawks because they have all the right pieces. But the fact that they're so bad with so many of the right pieces makes you worry the problem is much bigger than just getting guys healthy or getting guys playing right.
If Russ decides at the end of the season that this is not where he wants to be, look at our recent draft history. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any faith that they're going to find a new quarterback this decade? I'm not raising my hand. How about you guys?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm 100% with you on that. I just,
thanks for the call, Joseph.
Yeah, really appreciate it, Joseph. I'm 100% with you on that. That I just, moving on from Russell Wilson or getting into a situation where he wants to be traded, I just really believe that it is a bad position for the franchise. Just 100% believe that in my heart. Now, the other part that Joseph's bringing up, though, is this offense and why have they not performed well? And I believe there's a bunch of factors that go into that, but very simply what I would say, just to put it in the most simplest terms, number one, I don't believe that this offense has functioned anywhere near or stylistically been anywhere near consistent of why Shane Waldron was brought in here to do. Pre-snap motions, tempo, you know, getting the tight ends involved on a consistent basis, those three areas and making the game simpler on Russell Wilson, I think that those have not happened and transpired. The other thing is that I believe that on third downs, between execution of the quarterback, receivers, protection, that has been a huge issue. That's been a big problem that is sustained from last year and is a horrible trend that puts any offensive coordinator in a really bad spot. So, and then finally, what I would say is this offensive line, unfortunately, has not come together the way that we would hope that it would have. And Ray Roberts has astutely pointed to the lack of preseason and time to play together and gain that chemistry, but we're entering week 10 of the season. Like, I don't think we can keep pointing to that again. And, you know, performances that have happened across the board has just been disappointing in terms of what you thought you were going to get entering the year. And that's why you have not had a very positive and consistent run game. It's why you look at the other factors of Russell Wilson squarely the game falls with Russell Wilson, right? They did not win because of Russell Wilson in that game and his turnovers. But the other factor was it was increasingly difficult as well because that pass protection was not great against the good Green Bay Packer front. So you factor all that in, and that to me has been that's been a big reason why this offense has not come together the way that you've wanted to. But it's still, Joseph, as you talk about it, it's still been puzzling.
Going to Sean in Centralia, line four. Sean, what's the easier fix, the Huskies or the Hawks?
You're going to laugh at me probably, but I'm going to say the Huskies.
Why? Why the Huskies? I'm not going to laugh at you. I want to hear your reasoning why. You can make me a believer here.
If she makes the right hire, okay, that immediately means that right hire brings in the right assistants. It means an improvement in recruiting. All of the things that it takes to make college football work. I think the Seahawks are in much deeper trouble than we've looked at. And one of your callers talked about it a little bit ago, that the offense hasn't been good since the second half of last year. It was the very reason that supposedly Shoddy is gone. And then this year, if you look at the 2-3 start, we talk about them scoring 30 points against Tennessee, but I think we forget one of those drives was a 6-yard drive, and the other one I think also was within the 50. So the offense really, I mean, I don't want to take away from 30 points, but I want to just look at it realistically how we got there. I think there's some serious issues, and one real quick I'll touch on. We keep talking about we need to change the offense around, give Russell more opportunity. But I still think if Russell has gotten more opportunity in having some control of the offense, then is he part of the issue? Is his desire to throw deep, because that is his strength, is that still playing a part in why the offense isn't converting on third down? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a quarterback. But I have to wonder if he's got more say in the offense or what's going on at the line of scrimmage, then is he part of the issue too? Thanks. That's basically where I'm going with it.
That's a great...
Thanks for the call, Sean.
Sean, are you still there?
No,
he's not there. Okay, he brings up a lot of great points there. The one question I wanted to ask him, which is pivotal, is yes, if UW makes the right hire, that's great. But how much confidence and how much faith do you believe or do you have that they will do that? That is the caveat to that whole line of thinking. So I don't disagree that the Seahawks have a huge issue on their hands and they've got a lot to figure out. But ultimately, where I stand on this, Stacey, is I think that the Seahawks are an easier fix, an easier solution, knowing how complicated it can be versus UW, because there isn't a whole lot of track record of them getting that hire right, and that is a big part of that equation. Where do you sit?
Yes. Yeah, I have. I also have.
Serious doubts?
Serious doubts, and but, I don't like that.
So do you think that the Seahawks or UW are the easier fix?
I think that the Seahawks, right now I lean Seahawks because they have a lot of the right pieces in place, but I go back to Joseph's call where it's like, it's that same in theory thing. In theory, it should be the Hawks. You have a franchise quarterback. You have the head coach that's been there. You've got a GM that's been there. You've got Bobby Wagner. You've got Jamal Adams. You've got all these pieces on paper, but it's not working. Does that speak to a larger systemic issue?
That's why, after that Saints game, I talked about how everything is under evaluation. And look, this first game wasn't great for Russell Wilson and this offense against Green Bay. It is further under investigation and evaluation as you go down the second half of the season. I think that answer will reveal itself.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by King's Heating and Air. What Caught Our Eye Part 2 is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by King's Heating and Air. We talked about what caught our eye, and we just had time to get to one of them, so let's get back to it. Jake, go ahead and hit us with your second item that caught your eye from Sunday's game.
Well, the funny thing is that with our Caught Our Eyes segment, usually we're rolling through, and we got caught on only the first one was we were talking about Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
We were complaining, but
what got caught up in my eye.
I see.
I nailed that one.
Jake is only supporting you because you guys are friends. It wasn't even a good joke.
But how about we get to some positives?
Not even a good joke.
How about we get to some positives? Instead of being frustrated and taking it out on each other, let's talk about some positives.
Number one, tearing us apart.
Trey Brown and Jordan Brooks were serious bright spots to this defense. I mean, a big reason why this group has gone from struggling at the beginning to the season to turning things around and playing legitimate football against a very good playoff team in the Green Bay Packers is the fact that these two, number one, Jordan Brooks is starting to understand his assignments better, playing with confidence and making plays when needed. But Trey Brown, since he's been added to that list or been added to the rotation and now has taken over that starting role, man, he took over and has really solidified a group that was horrendous, right? I mean, incredible job by a rookie, a fourth-round pick, who is playing with so much confidence and swagger and trusting his instincts that he is making plays in the run game, he's making plays in the passing game, and he has not made a major mistake in coverage. That has been incredibly surprising to see after his first action is coming off of a stint on IR. I mean, that is really hard to do as a rookie cornerback in this league. But, you know, make no mistake. Yes, you've gotten great contributions from a lot of other guys, and you're getting better play from everyone as well. Bobby Wagner deserves a lot of credit. You know, you look at everybody. Jamal Adams has a great game. But those two young players, along with Daryl Taylor, are certainly bright spots for this defense. And those guys playing at a high level has really elevated this defense.
Yeah, it didn't end up going anywhere, but he has a penchant for big plays and big moments. Obviously, we saw what he did against the Steelers, a great play. We know what he did at the collegiate level. That big play he had, and this one came on 4th and 2 just before halftime. And obviously, his pass breakup causes a turnover on downs for Seattle. Seattle doesn't capitalize on it, but they had a chance to, and what was at that point a 3-0 ball game. So I like that one. Yeah, Trey Brown has been so stellar, and both he and Daryl Taylor, one of the more interesting developments of the season, if only because neither stood out really during training camp. And, obviously there's the whole thing of like training camp superstars where like a random fifth wide receiver will look phenomenal and then either won't make the team or won't really do much of anything. But normally you can see good play from your starters, and no one in the cornerback group really stood out too much. DJ Reed was injured for much of the training camp and preseason, but no one really stood out in that group. And of the defensive line and defensive end, I would say that Carlos Dunlap looked the best out of any of them. And Daryl Taylor looked good. He had some moments, but it's not like he was the name we were talking about. Lo and behold, he's leading the team in sacks, and Trey Brown has been a nice answer for them at corner. So
yeah.
All right, my next one. I'm serious. This is a serious what caught my eye. Both you and Curtis and Taylor back there are all going to make fun of me, but this is a real one. It has nothing to do with the Seahawks, but it has to do with celebration etiquette after big plays.
This one
in particular is about Lambeau Field, so maybe as not Packers fans and not people covering this team, we don't get it. But A.J. Dillon runs for a touchdown. Gross. Okay. He goes to do the Lambeau leap. Phenomenal. Do you. Mm-hmm. Whatever. It's your party. You know what I mean? You can do what you want. The, I believe, right guard, who did not make a pivotal block, also does the Lambeau leap. Now, did he do it because they were friends? I don't know. Maybe they were celebrating together. But hear me out. It is actually bad etiquette to do a Lambeau leap with the person that got the touchdown, most especially if you were not a part of that play. This is the thing that was keeping me up at night.
Everybody have some fun.
No, and
when are the old linemen ever going to get a chance to Lambeau leap?
It's impressive that he got up there.
If you're the lead blocker, if you're a big part of a play.
If you're an old lineman and it's a rushing touchdown, it kind of feels like your touchdown, right?
Absolutely, and you're a part of every play of that
drive. All I
know
is that if I am a Packers fan in that audience and I see A.J. Dillon running towards me and then I see a right guard running towards me, I'm like, no. I want no part of this Lambeau leap. I am moving back.
See,
so you're saying, Stacey, if like Jake or I get a promotion, you don't want to be invited to our party?
No, but I'm exactly. saying what I'm yeah, saying exactly. is what I'm. No, this is what it is. This is what it is. If you guys get a promotion, if let's say something yes. really exciting happens for Curtis. Curtis gets a cake and a celebration. He goes up to give a speech, and then I walk up next to him to also give a speech.
I could actually see that happening. I could totally
That's
see that happening.
That's what that looks like. That's what it looks like to me. Someone does a Lambo leap because he got a touchdown. You can't Lambo leap next to him and take that away.
So the person who scores the touchdown is the only one to Lambo leap.
Yes.
That is your Packers etiquette. Now, yeah. I don't necessarily disagree, but at the same time, if you're an offensive lineman, part of a rushing touchdown, I do believe that if you have the energy and the athleticism to Lambo leap, then go right ahead because you were a part of that. You are absolutely a part of that skirmish. And the reason why I believe you don't see it a whole bunch and any offensive lineman
offensive
out there.
Offensive linemen can't do that? Wow.
Because they have no desire. No, not because they can't, because they have no desire, because they are dog tired and they look at that and go, yeah, that's some skill player stuff. I don't have any time for that. I'm not going to Lambo leap. I'm too tired. I'm going to go back on the bench and get ready to go back to work again. I believe that's more of the mindset of an offensive lineman rather than traditionally wanting to get up there in the Lambo leap. You kidding me? You look at the offensive lineman. What's his name? Hunt from the Miami Dolphins. The moment he got his opportunity to have the football in his hands, he took full advantage of that.
Nose for the end zone.
Every offensive lineman, part of the Green Bay Packers, wants to be a part of that Lambo leap. I just don't think they have the energy to do so. Let's spin another one quickly in here. I will say this time and time again. Until I am blue in the face, Jamal Adams' performance didn't feel great because of his INT. I felt like that was great because Stacey's bold take. She predicted it. But I thought Jamal Adams was having a great game even before that. And his ability to generate pressure on Aaron Rodgers multiple times, to me, was a bigger factor than the interception. Jake, you could say, well, what are you talking about? That took away points. Yes, it did. It did. It was a big play, a big moment. But Jamal Adams, to me, where he has the biggest effect on the game is when he can generate pressure on the quarterback and you feel his presence and you have to account for him and you see him around the line of scrimmage. Jamal Adams has been playing great football. And except for two plays against the Rams, everybody's been dogging him on his coverage. He's done really, really well this season outside of those two plays against the Rams. He just hasn't been able to generate the turnovers or the big plays, and that's why you pay him $17.5 million. It was great to see him get the INT, but it wasn't the sole reason that people will point to and say, see, now, finally, you do that, and I will say that you're worth it. Him getting pressures, him frustrating quarterbacks with and forcing them to hurry up and throw incompletions or getting sacks, to me, that is just as good. And finally, we got to see that for the first time this season. He registered, finally, his first quarterback hit, and he had two of them in this game. They have to get more out of him in that way, and I believe that he will have a big impact for the rest of the season in every single game that he plays.
All right, what I need to know is coming your way. Here's how it works. You send in any question you have. Any question you have heading out of this weekend where you had Jimmy Lake fired, the Seahawks were shut out by the Packers, all kinds of stuff happened this weekend. Any questions you have leading up to this moment that are still lingering in your mind, we're going to talk about it. Once again, we are turning it over to you. Send in any question you want an answer to. 206-421-3776. Text that number right now. Your questions are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating Cooling Electric. Send your questions in now to the Mac and Jack's text line for What I Need to Know, 206-421-3776. What I Need to Know, why do the Seahawks not use Russell Wilson for more designed running plays or more rolling pocket plays to allow him more options?
I would agree with you on the rollout plays. Look, you don't want to use them all the time. I mean, you're cutting off half the field. You don't need to make it that simplistic, but you should be, in my opinion, you should be calling, you know, five of those plays a game. Getting him out on the edge. You want to marriage the run and the pass game together. Part of it's play action down the field. Part of it is just simple naked bootlegs, getting yourself out on the edge and trying to hit a tight end or a receiver in the flat, or trying to take advantage of a shot in terms of an over route. I just think that getting those more simplistic plays involved in there can get you in a rhythm, and it can marry with the run game better. And that's one thing I have not seen them do a ton that I saw them do all the time down there in LA that I thought that would have had carry over here. But in terms of the design runs, Russell's just not that quarterback anymore. It's not that he can't be a dynamic quarterback with his legs, but I see that in passing situations where he can, you know, choose the running lanes that become available during a pass and being able to take off and run. It's not that he can't do designed runs, but it sparingly. I don't think it becomes a massive part of your running game.
What I need to know, why doesn't Russell Wilson check down more often? I will say post-game, Russell Wilson said, particularly on that interception to Tyler Lockett, that he should have checked down. And he had two options. Collins was open, and I want to say it looked like someone wearing 13, but I think it was Freddie Swain, 18.
Yeah.
Not sure, but he was wide open.
Well, in those situations, he absolutely should have. And I believe that when you're in that situation where he was at, as I can tell you from my perspective as a quarterback, when things are not in rhythm, sometimes you, and it's going on for an extended period of time, sometimes you try to force things to happen. And that's not the right way to play, but I can understand the mindset and the framework of why he made that decision and not checking it down. The answer moving forward is that you can't have that. You've got to let the game continue to come to you despite what is going on, and you've got to check it down. And I believe you'll see a more concerted effort from him to check it down. And what I hope as that happens is what you don't want to have happen is that you don't allow plays to develop, right? So it's that fine line of understanding that you still got to let plays develop and not go to the check down too quickly. But if things don't pan out and they don't work, get that ball to your hands, check it down, go to the open receiver and move forward. And that pass to Will Dissly, guess what? Remember that flat route, that underneath route that happened with Will Dissly that ended up going for 20-something yards? That was a check down. So just allow those things to come to you and get to them more often. I absolutely believe that will be to the benefit of Russell Wilson. And it's a great question, but there's no obvious answer as to why he doesn't or doesn't do it. It's just it has to happen.
What I need to know, Stacey, do you hate offensive linemen? First of all, how dare you? Absolutely not. I would never. Offensive linemen, some of the most important players. Among the most important players in football.
Well,
nothing
they're,
but respect.
They're asking the question
respect.
Just simply because
well,
you don't want
it.
Them to celebrate
no,
with the
no,
running back.
No, no, no. Another running back could have jumped in there, and I would have said the same thing. That if you make the touchdown, that's your Lambo leap, and someone else jumping into it. Again, the analogy I used was it's like Curtis if he had a party, and Curtis is up there being presented a cake and making a speech, and then I walk up next to him and pick up my champagne glass to also make a speech. And it's like
that would happen.
Well, yeah, but the point stands. This party isn't about you, Stacey.
So Stacey can do that, but
look, I see a lot of myself in that offensive lineman that decided to jump up there. I think it was Jenkins. I'm not sure. What I need to know is Shane Waldron getting out-coached.
Well, I don't know how you could say anything else other than that, to be honest with you. I mean, how could I sit here and say, no, he hasn't been outcoached, or no, you know, things are going just fine when they're not? I mean, they're at the bottom of a ton of offensive categories and ones that are really important, including time of possession. So, no, I don't think it's going well, but I would also say that I believe there's some other factors that aren't completely on Shane Waldron. I don't think we've seen fully what Shane Waldron can do, but he needs to be part of the solution in terms of how they do better on third downs, right? And how they consistently get the ball, the balance between getting the playmakers that you have and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett involved, getting your quarterback to play at a high level, and then get that running game to balance it all out. That is the job that he is tasked with, and so far it has not gone well. But I will say that I think that this season has been incredibly difficult to judge him fully because of that injury to Russell Wilson and the fact that they have not been able to sustain drives. You don't sustain drives, you don't get deeper in the playbook. You don't get deeper in the playbook, then you don't really get to see everything that he has schemed up. And so I But I say all that to say that it's not going well so far, and that is something you absolutely have to evaluate as you get into the second half of the season.
What I need to know, what do you think of the Huskies going after Ed Orgeron? And Jake, before you answer, I want you to keep in mind how great mic'd up moments and press conferences would be.
Nope.
Are you sure?
Don't want anything to do with Coach O.
He's got a lot of baggage from his time at LSU.
I know
the lovability factor from the surface, but when you get a little
memes,
bit,
Jake.
You get a
That's
little bit
important.
Deeper.
That's what I'm saying.
You get a little bit
Think
deeper,
the
and the issues. It's not just performance. The reason why Coach O is not. It was let go at LSU. Right. There's a lot of off-the-field stuff I want no a part of when it comes to UW's program.
But, Jake, remember what we always say.
It's about the clout.
Do it for the clout.
Do it for the clout. That's the
How about winning? How about do that?
Only for the clout.
That carries a lot of clout.
Clout's more important.
Clout.
Winning, I would say, gives you a lot of clout.
All right. That'll do it for us today. Right. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. For Curtis Rogers, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.